Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monster Mania Radio. My name is Rob Dimension. I'm joined by Dave Hagen, the creator of Monster Mania Con. Don't forget, Monster Mania Con 23, September 28th through the 30th in Hunt Valley, Maryland. At the Hunt Valley Inn. Looking forward to it. What do you say?
Yeah.
You're so talkative.
You're back again.
I am.
Didn't we just
again.
Do this last week? My God,
yes.
The dog is afraid of you.
No, he's not.
Where's he hiding at?
He's somewhere
around here.
Yeah, he's doing good. So I want to briefly mention, in addition to Aji Argento and the Nightmare Girls reunion, you've added a few guests to Hunt Valley.
Yep. Actually, we've just added Edward Herman, who was Max from The Lost Boys, the lead vampire. Really excited to see him. It's only his second convention, and I've always been a Lost Boys fan, and we basically started the Lost Boys reunions. So this is a great addition for people that have come to Monster Mania before and haven't gotten his autograph yet.
Do you find it ironic that he also played Herman Munster?
It was funny when I read that. I had forgotten that, actually. And then when I read that, the first person I thought of was you.
I can't wait to get his autograph. I'm not even lying.
Thank God he didn't play Gum as Adam.
I can't wait to just... I'm probably the only person that... I wish that was out on DVD. I could say, like, oh, could you sign this? But, yeah, I can't wait. And then who else did you add?
We just added Jamie Kennedy today. Jamie was at our last show in New Jersey last month. And was a big fan favorite. That was his first convention experience. He really enjoyed it. Really, you know, he got what it was all about. He had a great time. And he came up to me afterwards and said, I definitely want to do this again.
Came out to the VIP party.
Yep,
hung
came
out.
To the VIP party.
Had
hung
a
out
great Q&A.
Yep.
Very entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, very good with everyone that went up. My son went up and got an autograph, and he said he was awesome to it. So, yeah, it's really good. So I'm really looking forward to it. Now, are we going to see anyone else?
We also just added today Amanda Wiss to the Nightmare on Elm Street Girls reunion.
Oh, wow, that's great.
We've had her on Cherry Hill before, but this will be her first time, I believe, down in the Maryland area. Definitely the first time with us down there. So, and we're still working on some people. I have a lot of offers out there. I always do. I'm adding people up till the day before the show,
yeah.
It seems. And, you know, some people you just were waiting and waiting and waiting because they're either tied up with other filming or, you know, television work or whatever. So hopefully you will be seeing some more names added to the list shortly. Basically, the way to find out is check us out on Facebook and on the website. The website's a few days behind the Facebook announcements. Facebook, as soon as I get an approval from someone to announce them, I'm on Facebook that day at some point, and you know, with the announcement. So the website might take like a day or two to catch up to the Facebook page.
And that's monstermania.net.
Yes. The Facebook page is the easiest and quickest way to find out the latest editions.
And they can follow you on Twitter at MonsterManiaCon. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Dimension. Hey, when I got here today, we instantly got into a little bit of a discussion because it had just been, not necessarily announced, but images have just kind of come out. And I know you're a huge fan of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. And the Universal Classic Monsters Essential Collection kind of just hit the web, and we've seen pictures of what it's going to look like. And we got to talking today about it, about what's available. Now, I want to just kind of run down what's going to be available on the Blu-ray set. Now, the Blu-ray set's going to retail for about $160 to $180.
All right. I know you're going to give me that for my birthday.
When's your birthday?
The day after that comes out.
No way. October 2nd?
Yeah, that's
Mine's
it.
September 18th. We should have a party together.
Actually, my birday's in July, but...
Is it really? Oh, yeah, I just wished happy birthday not long ago.
I'm trying to get a free copy.
All right, so it's going to be an 8-disc set, and it's going to have the Dracula from 1931, Frankenstein...
First thing we got to say, though, is all these have been restored.
Yes.
Which Universal does a tremendous job with film restoration. When they restored the 1931 Dracula, I got like one of the first prints of it and the first showing of it when we were doing spooky films at the Harwin Theater in New Jersey. And the print was pristine. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they're doing, you know, what they've done with the restoration of these.
Now, when you did that, was it by reel or was it by a DVD?
Oh, no, it was reel.
Was it?
It was 35 millimeter. We showed them at the 40-foot screened Harwin Theater in Mount Ephraim, New Jersey. I mean, it was... We tried to do it the way they did it back when I was a kid. We showed cartoons ahead of it.
Oh, wow.
We did a the first show that we did at Spooky Films was a Todd Browning night. We showed the 1931 Dracula, and we showed Freaks.
Freaks, yeah.
Yeah. So that was...
You have a good turnout. I'm sure there's a market for that today.
I would think so. You know, sadly, the Harmon Theater is not there anymore. I believe it's a CVS or a Rite Aid. It was in disrepair, you know, when we were showing it. Literally, the night that we showed it, if you remember seeing the scenes from Freaks where they're crawling around under the wagon that always still gets me, it was pouring rain in the film. And literally, there was a hole in the ceiling of the Harwin Theater.
No way.
And as it's raining, it was like 3D. It was like a special kind of 3D.
It was like the Tingler.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was literally raining in the movie theater as it's raining on the screen. So, I mean, it was kind of like Rain-O-Vision. But,
Rain-O-Vision.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot of fun. But I just wanted to say with this DVD, with this Blu-ray set, one of the key factors is that it's all going to be restored footage. I'm really looking to see.
Now, me and you both have the Legacy Collections, and I don't remember, were they actually a restored version on that, or is this supposed to be a better print?
I'm trying to remember if it was the restored version on the Legacy Dracula or not. I believe the copy version of the film we showed in the Harwin was the version that was restored for the DVD, either the Dracula set or an individual Dracula anniversary release. I'm a big fan of the Universal stuff. I've got... just about every release of the 1931 Dracula that they've come out with. Some have the Philip Glass music version that you can play as a bonus option, and you know, there's all different things. But I know the Dracula on the DVD, one of the later editions of the DVD, was the restored version. I don't know if they've gone back and re-restored that or not, but supposedly from what I had read or what I had thought I had read, all eight films were restored by Universal for this release, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that is.
So there's Dracula from 31, there's Frankenstein from 31, there's The Mummy from 32, Invisible Man from 33, The Bride of Frankenstein from 35, The Wolfman from 41, Phantom of the Opera from 43.
The Claude Rains one.
Yeah, how about that? And
I'd actually like to see the Lon Chaney one, the silent one, added to this too, but...
And The Creature from the Black Lagoon, the 54 version. And then you had actually discovered that this is going to also contain the 3D version of The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right. But again, I'm still waiting. I still cannot find out what 3D version are we looking at. Are we looking at the 3D version that is for the 3D television sets? Or are we looking at the 3D version with the red and the blue glasses?
Mm-hmm.
If it's the red and the blue glasses for the price of this set, I'm going to be not happy. Like, I want to see, you know, I want to see it for the 3D television, whatever process they call that. I mean, I want to see the best 3D version of this that I can see.
Now, it also features over 12 hours of bonus features, plus an exclusive collectible book. And it does say each film has been digitally restored from high-resolution film elements for the classic monster experience. And I am excited because it is a Blu-ray. Now, with Blu-ray sets, how often do you buy Blu-rays? Is it every purchase that you make is Blu-ray now?
Basically, from this point forward, if I'm buying a movie, generally most of my movie buying is, for the most part, to show presentations at the Monster Mania convention. So I try to get the best copy I can get for the fans. So if I don't already have it, if a film is out in Blu-ray or DVD, I'll buy the Blu-ray version.
Yeah. I mean, I have just started to buy Blu-rays myself. And, you know, the benefit is a lot of the Blu-rays now are available with Blu-ray, DVD, and digital download.
Yeah. And again... if something is available in 3D, I buy the 3D version. So you get the 3D version, the Blu-ray version, the DVD version, and the download version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited.
The disappointing thing, you know, with the Universal Monster set that's out...
It releases October 2nd. I wanted to add, I don't know if I mentioned that.
Okay, but, I mean, to me, a lot of the bonus features that they're listing are bonus features that are on previous releases of these movies on their previous DVD releases. So I mean, like a lot of the bonus features I've already seen. I looked at it. There's going to be a few new ones, but for the diehard avid Universal Monster fan that basically buys whatever comes out when it comes out, a lot of these bonus features you're going to have seen before.
All right, so let's just talk about that for a second. So if you have a movie from the 1930s and you're going to do bonus features, granted, most of the people that were in these films have passed on. These films are nearly 100 years old. I mean, we're talking, what are we, an 80-something years old now?
Yeah.
So what features could they add that you would feel like satisfaction for, that you would like to see happen as a Universal fan? You're a much more bigger Universal fan than I am. We've talked about that before, where you enjoy, you know, the Universal, you enjoy the Hammer films. What kind of DVD releases could they add or give you that you feel that you would, you know, learn more about the process of that film being made?
I mean, there are still some people that are around that are involved. Actually, Carla Lemley is still, you know, around. She's in her 90s. Last I saw her was at the Monster Bash convention in Pittsburgh a few years ago. I know she's done a commentary or have done some bonus features for Dracula before, but I mean, I'm sure there's things that they could, you know, new questions that they could ask her or new subjects they could touch on. Rico Browning is still around from The Creature from the Black Lagoon. He was the underwater creature in the first three films. I'm sure there's tons of things, you know, anecdotes that he could tell, stories that he could tell, what it was like, you know, just the process of, you know, how he got his oxygen under the water. I mean, there's still things that, places they could go and things they could do with this. I realize a lot of the features that they've had on the previous releases were very good, and I guess they're trying to give the Universal Monster fan, and you know, as much as they can give them by including them in this set, but it just seems it's a little bit pricey for those eight films.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll get it for the 3D creature, but I just think there's a little bit more they could do.
Do you think there's hope to grab a newer audience still for these films today, especially at that retail price? I mean, I'm not going to give, you know, I would always tell you to buy from, you know, whoever you're going to buy from, but I have seen it, you know, retailed for a pre-order price of less than $120. Do you think that that's still too steep to grab a newer audience of a newer generation that may not appreciate it?
I think it's a steep price for anybody. It's a steep price for an avid collector like me. You know what I mean? I've honestly, if it wasn't for the inclusion of the 3D creature, I might let this one slip by.
Really?
To be honest, yeah. I mean, really, the only reason I would buy this is for, I mean, it's going to be great to have them on Blu-ray. You know, I'm a big Blu-ray fan, but it's not going to be the last time that they're going to release these. Mm-hmm. You know, on Blu-ray, they'll come around again. Some other kind of package.
I would assume
sets.
They would be individually sold.
Yeah, and you know, they'll be cheaper in the future. They'll probably just have a creature release that has a 3D on it, but you know, more than likely, I'll pick up this set.
You know, especially nowadays with the way that kids are so, you know, I'll use children as an example, because I do want to have, you know, to be able to expose kids to this type of horror film when they're used to what's typically out in theaters today. I had a recent experience where I don't want to give too many spoilers away, where I just this past weekend went and saw Paranorman at a drive-in. And have you seen the trailer for that yet? That's on TV?
Yeah.
You know, it definitely is a more modern version of, like, you know, don't want to say like a Pixar type film, but there were zombies involved. You know, there was a little bit of a horror element. And it actually has a message of an anti-bullying involved in it. Where I blew me away. Like, I literally am seeing the film unravel. And at the end, I look at my wife and I'm just like, wow, that had like an anti-bullying, you know.
Bring it back to your childhood.
All the bullying.
Yeah, yeah.
I was openly sobbing. I like the new trend. You know, over the years, we've had the trend of like The Corpse Bride that's pulled, you know, kids back in, or Nightmare Before Christmas. Igor, you know, they pull in these celebrities for that. And now we have upcoming is Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah, that one I'm really looking forward
to. Which looks good. You know, and I like that because that is making kids, you know, I'm thinking in my head, I'm hoping that if they see a Frankenstein type character on there, that they turn around and they want to see a Frankenstein original film? Are they going to, you know, a parent's not going to obviously let a child watch the Robert De Niro version, but hopefully a parent would let a kid watch, you know, the original version from the 30s.
I'll tell you what's happening too. I mean, you're going to laugh, but Alvin and the Chipmunks are doing these movies for television. They just did. I haven't seen it yet, but I talked to my oldest son, and he was like, "Dad, you know, you would love this." They just did Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman.
Yeah.
And this weekend, I think tomorrow, is going to be Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet Frankenstein. Or,
yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what the title of it is.
But I've seen those
line.
Too, yeah.
And it looks really well done. I mean, you know, I hate to say I'm going to, you know, DVR an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie, but, you know, in all honesty, I'm going to, you know. So, I mean, I think, and what I like about it is the classic monsters. My son said that in the Wolfman one, you know, it was the next door neighbors were named Talbot, like, you know, in the original Wolfman movie by Kurt Siodmak. So, you know, I would watch it for that. I'm glad that, I know the zombie craze is what's happening now, but, you know, my heart still, you know, belongs to the Universal Monster, Frankenstein and Wolfman and Dracula. So I'm glad to see them getting any kind of resurgence at all. Really looking forward to Transylvania, Hotel Transylvania, you know.
I think it's great because we haven't seen that type of, you know, it's funny that's an older cartoon that's being revived to do this with, considering that for me, I have the most fondest memories of a lot of monsters in cartoons being Scooby-Doo, you know, where they had a lot of that where, you know, they were always foiled at the end, but still there was a lot of monsters, or even, what was it, Junior Frankenstein or any of those type cartoons.
Oh, Frankenstein Junior.
Any of those type of things, the Groovy Ghoulies. Any of those type of things that are on the wayside, which actually at the last Monster Mania, I actually picked up the Groovy Ghoulies.
I used to love that show.
Yeah, yeah. I was a big fan.
When my kids were younger, there was a television show. It was called The Halloween That Almost Wasn't. And it was later released. It was a movie with like a disco Dracula. But the kids loved it. You know, I mean, it was, you know, he over-exaggerated the Transylvanian accent and everything. Mm-hmm. But that was another way to get them into, you know, the monsters. And, you know, we watched that. I can't tell you how many times. You know, it's just another way to expose the kids to the, you know, the Universal Monsters or the theme of the Universal Monsters that, you know, I always appreciate, you know, the way to the avenue that it offers to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Hey, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Monster Mania Radio. Okay, guys, we are back for Monster Mania Radio. This is episode 7. And I brought some interesting items with me today, Dave.
No, not those again.
you know, how...
Does your wife know you travel around with this stuff?
Well, they're all over the house, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
How Monster Mania really came about, you know, I find it as an interesting story. I know that you have talked about in the past about, you know, your dad's situation, but then there's also more to the story. You know, I have had experiences being a toy dealer. I actually had a retail store, a comic book store over time. That's we left it now because
When the villagers came with
the pitchforks and the torches,
stormed the castle.
It's a tough business, and I know that you have a history of being a toy dealer as well.
Oh yeah, that's how Monster Mania started. We first started going to conventions. Like I said, you know, the first convention I went to was Chiller when they had Ingrid Pitt. You know, being the Hammer fan I was just like blown away to meet her. And then we went on to become dealers, selling toys and posters. Like we were one of the first companies to carry the Sideshow, Universal Monsters Series 1, you know, which still to this day is probably my favorite Sideshow offering, I would think, you know, and we did online business for a while and then, you know, eventually, grew into, you know, doing our own conventions and kind of the toy business and collectibles business for us kind of became, you know, went on the back burner, and then it just, the conventions were taking so much time, and I was still working a full-time job, so I just didn't have time to continue doing the, you know, the collectibles business. But it's a tough business, you know, it's, and it had changed over the years. You know, I was thrilled with Sideshow when they were coming out with the 7-inch figures, and then, you know, they moved on to the 12-inch dolls that, you know, they call them action figures. They're still dolls to me. And it was kind of disappointing. They came out with the Frankenstein series. You know, they had the Glenn Strange Frankenstein, which was awesome. They had the Bela Lugosi one and the Boris Karloff one. And but the problem was, you know, like I was saying, you know, before we started the show, you know, the hands were green, but if you rolled up the sleeves, the arms were still flesh color. Like, what they were doing is just taking, like, the general mold, you know...
Of the 12-inch doll.
Of the, yeah, and just, you know, putting the new sculpted hands and face on it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess, you know, feet or shoes. But, you know, for horror enthusiasts like myself, you know, like, to have the Bela Lugosi Frankenstein from Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman be the same body type and size as the Glenn Strange Frankenstein from, you know, House of Frankenstein, like, just didn't make any sense. Like, it, I really didn't like the route they were going. And then they became, they got into the more, you know, $400.
Yeah, they grabbed the Star Wars license and did a lot with the Star Wars license.
Yeah, but I kind of wish they, you know, I wish they would have at least continued or stayed with the 7-inch figures. I mean, they were individually sculpted and molded, and I thought they were the best that Sideshow had to offer, to be honest.
Well, the toy show, the toy market over years has changed dramatically, like the landscape. And I think it's finally starting to get back where it was in the early 90s. I can remember being a toy dealer, and we had originally carried Todd's Toys, which became Todd McFarlane's stuff. And once he had the Spawn movie out, I can remember doing a toy show and not being able to get the merchandise out of the boxes fast enough to sell. You know, before the internet really became popular, Star Wars Magazine did, like, exclusives with Star Wars stuff. You know, McFarlane Toys really exploded the market with their Spawn line. You know, and I'm being not just a dealer, being also a collector myself, I felt a little abandoned when he, you know, he basically was the reason for the explosion. You know, with Todd's Toys being so huge. And then what happened was, is that all comic companies, you know, more action collectibles and even smaller companies released action figures. And what happened was, is then the market dropped. It ceased. And he continued. And when he continued, then he also picked up the license for, you know, Major League Baseball, NFL, and, you know, hockey and everyone else. And, you know, he had done, like, you know, the horror lines of where he did, you know, Ash, and he did, you know, a Jason, and he did Leatherface, and he did all these guys, Michael Myers, everybody.
Yeah, he did Candyman. I mean, I think it was him that did Candyman.
Yep.
I mean, they had some great stuff, but, you know, I got frustrated with it from, you know, from being a, you know, a business owner, where when they started to do the whole chase figure thing, I mean, you know, everybody wanted, you know, the figure that you couldn't get, you know, mm-hmm. whether it was the Creature from Black Lagoon or Dracula with, you know, red lining to his cape instead of the gray, or vice versa, you know, whatever it would be.
And McFarlane did bloody variants where he had a Leatherface that had, the Leatherface figure came with a head that was with a bucket. And there's a clean version and a dirty version. I guess that's what the best analogy would be. The clean version had the head behind the poster that it came with, and he had less blood on his apron. The dirty version had the head literally in the front packaging, and Leatherface had more blood on him, and that was always like the chase or the more rare figure. And the difference was, you literally could spend, you know, $15 for the regular version and $35 or $40, $50 at the time for the dirty version. But anyway, go ahead. That
always annoyed me. I mean, I liked, you know, as the business owner, I like to make my customers happy. And
sure.
Generally, when Sideshow was sent out, for instance, the first set of the Universal Monsters, you know, it was, you got the three figures, Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, and each case contained an even amount. So, you know, for the collector that wanted the set of three, you know, it was easy to provide them a set of three. But then, like, later on, you know, as the different companies went to this chase figure thing, I mean, I get the whole, you know, they want to make it rare. They want people to talk about it. You know, they, you know, the price on the chase figure becomes, you know, if it's successful, becomes 3 to 4 times the price of, you know, what the non-chase figures are. But, I mean, it's just, to me, it's like, it's annoying. I mean, it's making the fans work for, you know, for your product. And I mean, I get the exclusivity of it. I get the,
Do you know how that kind of came about? The way that it really came about was that baseball cards started putting inserts in their packaging. And what would happen is it starts off with that mentality of, I'm going to buy a box of wax, which was like an insider term for baseball cards. And I'm going to try and pull that Ken Griffey Jr. card, or I'm going to try and pull that card that has FU on the bottom of the baseball
handle,
right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it starts. So what happens is, when you throw a chase figure in a case, being a vendor or being a seller, now instead of buying one or two cases, now you're going to probably buy 3 or 4 cases hoping to grab that chase figure. Because what happens whenever you buy a case from a seller standpoint is you're going to have figures that are hot and figures that are dead. So it, for me, it always seemed like maybe I was spinning my wheels by selling, you know.
Individual.
Yes, because you're going to spend, you know, let's say the figure itself costs you $10 per figure. You're going to sell the hotter figures for $13, okay, to retail. The less popular figures are going to sell for $7. So now out of, if it's a 12-packed case, you've made no money. You've made whatever you've invested into the case. By grabbing the chase figure, now it will allow you to sell, if the market was warranting it, for $40. And now you can grab that extra $40 and, you know, you make $40 off the case. It's hard to... It's hard to sell individual figures. If you sell it by the case, now you have...
Well, see, the answer to that is to sell each figure in an individual case. You know, I mean, if, you know, like...
Well, like a closed case, is that what you're saying, where people don't know?
You know, like, no. You know, if say...
Oh, you're going to say, we talked about this earlier, about Ryan Howard.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, going back to the monster theme, you know, like... With it being Sideshow or Mezco or whatever company you want to say, you know, if they're coming out with, say, 3 new figures in
let's say they have Frankenstein, Dracula, and Wolfman.
Right, a case of Frankenstein. You can buy Frankenstein by the case, Dracula by the case, Wolfman by the case.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Why not just offer it that way? Like, you know, why does it always have to be?
Because they're not going to do that. They're going to short pack you, whoever the rare figure is going to be. Let's say that Frankenstein's the best figure out of the set.
Well, it would be Dracula, generally.
Okay.
From past experience, it would be Dracula.
All right, so the case breakdown on a 12-figure case would be 5 Wolfman, 4 Frankenstein, and the other 3 would be Draculas. I'm going to tell you how the case breakdown is going to be, because Wolfman would be the less popular. That's always the way it is. So, I mean, I do see your point.
Why does it have to be that way?
Because that's how they can sell more cases that way. That's the only way that I can think about it. I mean, I'm not saying that their business practices, they can do it how they want, but that's always how it's been. It's like, even if you were to buy Star Wars cases, it's always going to be whatever the figure. You're never going to get. I'm telling you right now, the breakdown of Star Wars figures by Hasbro is insane. If right now they have like fan favorite figures that come out. There is 1 fan favorite per case.
Oh, I know. I used to work at Kitty City
years ago. So what happens is then after...
Well, I mean, I understand what all you're saying, but right. My point is, you know, maybe a company out there should treat its customers like people instead of like, you know, instead of trying to squeeze every dollar out of them, maybe if a company came out and just said, okay, these are the three new figures in the line, you can buy a case of, you know... Wolfman or Dracula or Luke Skywalker, wherever, you know, the item may be. Like, why not treat people like people? You know what I mean? It's why does it have to be the way that it is? I mean, I understand why it's the way it is, but my opinion is, if it were me and I was coming out with a toy company, I would do it the way I'm saying. I would do it, you know, I wouldn't buy into the whole chase thing. You know, you know what you're getting when you buy a case of figures from Monster
Now, I brought some toys with me today because Neil DeConte from DeConte's Figures and Collectibles came out with a Leslie Vernon figure. I also brought a NECA, Jason from Friday the 13th Part 3. And then I also brought a Tarman from Amok Time Toys that are based out of New York. And they do exactly what you say. They, like, you know, when you go to Neil's table, you're going to grab a Leslie Vernon figure. There's no rare figure or chase figure. From NECA Toys, in this Jason, I brought the clean version, which has less blood. There's also a battle damage version from Part 3.
Does the other one scare you too much?
No. No, I just, I didn't know there was two versions, to be totally honest. I just grabbed this one.
Now,
and
do
then,
you feel, do you feel ripped off that you didn't know that and that you would rather have the bloody one? You had to be disappointed, right?
I was disappointed, but what I like about them is there's no rarity.
Okay.
There's no rarity. Like, you know, I don't know about how the cases are packed out, but when I looked it up, when I looked it up online, I did like a review. You can go to robdementia.com and I wrote a review specifically about that Jason figure because I haven't done a written review and I thought it was worthy of it. I didn't see a difference in price. They both retail for $18, the battle damage version or the clean version. There was no mismatch of toys. The same with Amok Time Toys and their Tarman figure. I like it. It's a bigger bubble box packaging that they have. You know, the figure, they're, all the figures are packed the way that they are now. It's like a vacuum pack where it's all sealed completely around.
Yeah.
The clamshell's no longer glued to the cardboard backing.
Yeah, it's a whole.
And you literally, the only
unit.
Thing I don't like about that is you have to cut the figure out. So by cutting the figure out, if there is a card that's with it, it kind of ruins the card unless you're really. I get so excited, I just.
Yeah.
Take excited. I just start cutting. But I think that what I like about that is because of what you're saying, they don't do that. You know, NECA Toys has been around for several years, and they really picked up the slack from McFarlane Toys by doing various lines of franchise films, whether it's Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween. The only thing that I wish is that I wish that their figures, because now they're in Toys R Us, which I could get into in 1 second, which blows me away. The only thing I wish is that there was a larger production run, but I understand why there's not, because there was a Halloween figure of Bob in the sheet that I was like, oh, I mean, I want to grab that figure, and I never had a chance to grab it, and now it retails for like $100 because of the rarity. But, you know.
But see, I mean, but. The toy company is not getting that $100.
They are not.
It's somebody that, you know, that bought it and held on to it that obviously
knew possibly that it was going to go up
right,
in value.
But, you know, he bought it as an investment, more than likely, not so much because he was, you know, buying it for his own collection. You know what I mean? And that gets into the whole thing, which is what's ruined comic books,
mm-hmm.
which is what's ruined card collecting.
Oh, it killed baseball cards.
You know what I mean? Like the whole speculator thing, you know, like, what was it, Walking Dead issue 100, how many covers?
There was 17 or 18 covers.
You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff, I mean, in the short run, it might be headline grabbing or, you know, for the diehard collectors, you know, maybe that's going to work. But in the long run, I think the speculative business of collecting is what's really hurting a lot of, you know, the mentality and the approaches that companies are taking when they're releasing merchandise. You know, I just don't like the way that it's turned.
Well, I think that, like I said, you know, I named a few retailers that are doing it the right way and trying to get their name out and trying to satisfy the hunger from the fans that want to see that. But did you ever think that you would walk into a Toys R Us and see a Jason mask for sale? Or see a Freddy, a Friday the 13th figure or a Freddy figure, you know, like, and it baffles me because, you know, even though Freddy is a beloved figure, he's like a pedophile. So, you know, like that they show like in the beginning where basically you think like, oh my God, you know, that he was bringing these kids to this place and we don't really know what he was doing and he was killing these kids into this boiler room.
They were playing with color forms.
Okay. Whatever. But did you ever think that, do you think that Toys R Us knows in their head that they're selling a figure that's like that or a Michael Myers that kills?
I don't think Toys R Us cares.
They just want to sell products.
They're worrying about how many dollars go into the register before mm-hmm. they close their next store. I mean, honestly, I mean, yeah. You know, Toys R Us is, I mean, that's a whole separate conversation. But, you know, right now Toys R Us are combining with Babies R Us and fighting for their survival. They're the major chains like Walmart and Target are killing them.
If you were a toy vendor, if you were a toy manufacturer, let me work it like that. Would you go the route of online exclusives now?
No, I'm so anti all that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't. I'm
so you would have one particular version.
Well, see, going back to when I was a dealer, the thing that really annoyed me. I mean, I supported Sideshow from the very beginning, mm-hmm. and you know, if you wanted to get a Sideshow figure, there were only you know certain places you could get it from, and at that time I happened to be.
Yeah,
one
you have
of
to
them.
Be a licensed retailer
right.
or whatever from them. Yeah.
Then Sideshow became a retailer of their own. So instead of just being a wholesaler where they would sell, you know, to Monster Mania Collectibles website, they were selling the figures from their own website, which one of the reasons why I backed out of being a dealer, because they could offer discounts. I think it was the Hunchback from Notre Dame figure, or Son of Frankenstein figure is one of the two. They were offering it at a discount that was like a dollar more than what I was paying for at wholesale. So now, how could I make any money on it? Because besides what I paid for it individually on wholesale, I had to pay for it to be shipped to me, too.
Sure.
And then I got to pay to ship it to somebody.
Right.
So how could I compete selling the item for the retail price when Sideshow was selling it for, you know, $2 to $5 above my wholesale price.
Yeah.
They were cutting out their own wholesalers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never go that route. I mean, if I were a toy company, I would either do one of two things. I would either sell it all exclusively myself, or I would be only a wholesaler and let other companies buy from me wholesale and sell them individually. But I would never compete against my own customer,
yeah.
which is what Sideshow did in that case. And I'm sure other companies have gone on and done too.
Yeah, I just think it's a tough business. But I am happy that the collectible figure business seems to be making a resurgence. And it doesn't seem like it's being, avalanched with a ton of stuff. You know, it's nice when you go to a convention and you can see, a highlighted figure like, the Tar Man or the Bub from a Muck Time Toys. And they have a Killer Clowns coming out. Or, the Leslie Vernon from Neil. Or even NECA, even though NECA doesn't do your shows, their figures are prominently displayed everywhere because all the vendors, have them and are trying to sell them. And I don't think that 25 or less is bad for a figure. You know, some are more statuesque. Some have more, articulation. It's just a matter of, I guess, each personal preference. And sculpting has come a long way. So I'm a big fan of it. So, I haven't been a collector for years. And then I do the show in August, and I'm going through, and I'm like, oh, I see that. I want to grab that. Oh, I want to grab that. I want to grab that. And that was just in the women's room. And took you a second.
Yeah. I can't say that. No, I can't say that. I was going through the list. I got down about number 7, and I still couldn't say it.
But
I'll
just throw
happy. Something out there, going back to a conversation we had earlier. With the toy market, I get that it's for collectors. I get that whole thing, but just as we were saying about Paranorman being having a bullying message and being geared towards kids, these things are toys, I get that and believe me, I'm one of them. I get the collectors, leave them in the clamshell and put them on the shelf and
mm-hmm.
this, that, and the other thing with it, but. You know, one of the things that I took pleasure in when I was selling the, Universal Monster 7-inch figures from Sideshow is I knew a lot of people were buying them for their kids. And
oh, wow, really?
Yeah, they were. So, it was cool. Like, I'm a fan of the Frankenstein and the Wolfman and Dracula. And, and I was shipping it out to people that were, in their order form, they would, write in the comment section, oh, I'm turning on my son to the Universal Monsters and my grandson to, the Wolfman or whatever. So, I got a lot of, personal satisfaction from that, knowing that, the next generation or two generations below me are getting a Wolfman toy, just like I got one, in the 60s to play with. I would like to see I would like to think that, you know, some of these toys are going on and actually being used as toys instead of collectibles, too.
I think right now the collectible market is making such a huge comeback because of shows like Toy Hunter, Collection Intervention, which is on Sci-Fi. If you're a collector or you haven't collected or maybe you have some stuff that you're looking to get rid of, I mean, don't be fooled and think that you're going to have some sort of huge fortune on your hand, but it's fun to watch those shows and kind of see what's going on out there.
Yeah, I like collectors that collect for the sake of collecting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of turned off by the, you know, the collector that's doing it for
the money.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if there really is. I mean, it's hard to be that guy anymore. It's hard to be that guy anymore because there is no real big aftermarket unless you have something like, you know, Barbie number one.
Yeah, but you just got done saying, you know, the Bob Halloween figure is selling for how much?
Oh, it's like $100.
Yeah, so I mean,
I want to buy it to put it with the Michael Myers that's on my shelf,
yeah.
and you know, anything else. It's just, you know, when I open these up, I mean, you know, the Jason kind of sits on my DVD shelf, and you know, Leslie Vernon sits on this other shelf that I have, and I mean, I'm just, you know. They're
right next
just
to Skipper and Barbie.
Yeah, whatever. Or what was Barbie's sister's name? See, I figured you would know. Hey, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Monster Mania Radio.
I own a motel not too far from here, and you'd be welcome to spend the night if you'd like. Who is this? My mother is dead. No, I won't do that. You can't make me kill her.
Psycho 2.
It's starting again.
Rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
The Davises have had a baby, but they're not sending out any announcements. Most new parents are a little scared when they have a baby. The Davises are terrified. You see, there's only one thing wrong with the Davis baby. It's alive. It's alive. Don't see it alone. Please. Rated PG.
Okay, guys, we're back for Monster Mania Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to us every Friday at MonsterManiaRadio.net on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. Plus, you can constantly stay in touch with Monster Mania by checking out MonsterMania.net. Always updated, always on top of things. Plus, go to Facebook, look you up.
Look me down.
Whatever you got to do.
Look me all around.
Normally, this is when we would talk a little bit about horror news. But, you know, what I've noticed is a little bit of a trend. And the new trend seems to be, and I'm not sure if it's good or bad, the new trend seems to be when you make a movie and you release that movie, I've noticed now that there's a little bit of a window where they release these movies. It's not really necessarily new. It's been like the last year or so. I've seen it more often than not.
Oh, get to the point.
You release these movies through video on demand. And I'm trying to find out what your opinion is on that because these movies are on video on demand and then they go to theaters. You know, like this movie just got released. It's called VHS. I haven't seen it yet. It's $10 to rent on video on demand, or
wow,
you can rent it on iTunes. And then it also hits theaters October 5th, I would assume, in a small release. So what's your opinion on that?
My opinion is that they probably are not expecting to do well at the box office at all. They're trying to get any kind of income from it that they can, and they figure that by doing it on the video... Video on demand. By doing it that way that...
it's like pay-per-view.
Yeah, they'll get some money in that way. But, I mean, I can't imagine... Obviously, it's a film that the company feels isn't going to do all that well at the box office. That's my opinion.
And did you also see this past weekend, not to stray, Creature is no longer the lowest box office draw.
What came out lower?
The Ogilvies, it's called, I think. It's like a kid's movie. It was in... unlimited amount of theaters, tons. And over the weekend, the box office draw per theater average was $237.
Wow. And you figure, what, $10 a ticket at least? What's that, 21 people? 23 people?
Right?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, I think it was called The Ogilvies or Mr. Ogilvies or something like that. It was like a kid's movie.
Was it advertised? I mean, were there commercials for it?
I have no idea.
See, advertising is so important when you have a product. I mean, you know, if you put... I don't get the people spend, you know, all this time and effort and money and stress and everything to put a product out there, and then they short themselves on advertising it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like, you put all that work and everything into something to not let people know that it's out there. It doesn't make sense to me. But
you know, I think what happens is that you get so focused, if you were using the movie medium as an example, you get so focused on making the movie that you don't think long term about the advertising aspect. All right, what am I going to do after it's done? How am I going to get word out there? You know, we've talked in the past that social media is a great advertising tool, but it's not the
success. Yeah, it's not the be all and end all.
No, absolutely not.
And probably what happens in a lot of cases, I don't know about this particular film, just guessing, but I know, like, in a lot of other projects, like, sometimes, you know, from doing the movie that you're doing, you know, initially you come out with a budget and you think things are going to cost you this much and that much, and then, you know, as the project goes from the development stages to the actual process of it, you know, many different factors get thrown into the mix, and it raises the cost and it raises the expense of what you have. And if you only went into a project with, say, you know, $20,000-$30,000 to spend, and you were expecting the project, it was going to cost you $20,000, and maybe you're going to spend $10,000 on advertising, you might find out the project cost you $28,000, and now you've only got $2,000 for advertising. So either you got to come up with more money for advertising, or you advertise less than you originally planned, and that's going to kill you.
The only thing I can think of with a strategy like that video on demand before theaters, is they're catering to people that maybe aren't going to go to the theaters. They're catering to that, I don't want to say that lazy factor, but you can kind of say that sometimes, because as horror fans, I don't know how many times I've said, oh, I want to go see that movie, and then I never go, and I end up just buying the DVD. But you've invested 10 in seeing it now on video on demand, okay? When that DVD, if it comes out in theaters 2 weeks later, are you going to spend an additional 10 plus 10 for your friend to go see it again? And then are you going to invest another $20 or $15 to buy it, to own it? That's a huge investment.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's the same person. You know, I mean, I don't think the person they're marketing the video on demand by for, they're expecting to watch it on video on demand and then go to the theater and see it. I think they're trying to hit two different audiences that mm-hmm. way, or two different customer bases that way. I mean, I honestly think that we're probably 5 to 10 years away from video on demand releases being simultaneous with theatrical releases.
You think?
I really do. I mean, going back to when I was a kid, they would re-release movies in theaters because there were no, you know, the first thing to come out, I guess, was either Laserdisc or VHS. But I mean, if you wanted to see a movie, you went to the movies to see it again. They would re-release, you know, Frankenstein probably did more money in its 1945 re-release than it did in the 1931 release.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you couldn't buy VHSs.
Right.
And once that door opened, then, you know, once VHSs became affordable, where you could spend $20 on a VHS or $15, that killed the aftermarket. You know,
right.
That killed the rental market. It killed the video, you know, to go re-release, to go see the re-releases because of that. Although I'm not sure what Avengers just did this past weekend.
I actually went to see Avengers this past
weekend.
Oh, yeah,
did you? What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. Honestly, the 3D, I was hoping for more, you know, with the 3D. I mean, what they did was great, but I thought there would be a lot more of the, you know, of the 3D effects in it than there was. But I really liked the movie. But going back to what we're saying, I think for the most part, the time difference between when a movie gets released in the theater mm-hmm. and the wait time before it comes out on DVD or video on demand, that seems like that time period is getting shorter.
Oh, I agree
with
that.
And shorter. So, I mean, I bet you within the next 5 years, we're going to start to see simultaneous video on demand and theatrical releases. And to be honest with you, with the size of the movie screens the way they are, I mean, the movie screens, when you have got a multiplex that's got, you know, 25 theaters in it, you know, is the movie screen really that much larger than what some big screen TVs are nowadays.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I've seen,
you know,
some
by comparison of, you know, how close you are to the screen and everything.
Do you think of the theater going experience now as an annoyance now compared to 25 years ago when you would go and enjoy the experience?
It's night and day. And it is, depending on the theater and
the crowd.
The crowd, mm-hmm. It can be extremely annoying. Mm-hmm. I went to see the Friday the 13th reboot with Derek Mears in it. Mm-hmm. In the final 5 to 10 minutes of the movie, two cops came into the theater with this young child that was left at the food counter, literally saying, is Eric here? Is there an Eric here? Like, we have your son. And the movie's still playing. Yeah. And this is like opening weekend. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, you see the commercials before
was
the
Eric
movie
there?
Comes on. No, Eric wasn't there.
wasn't.
No, and this thing continued, like, through.
There's no,
like,
payoff whatsoever.
No, it was just, I was getting ready to get my machete. And, but, you know, I foresee the end of movie theaters, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Unless they do... They're trying to do other things now where they're showing, which I don't get. They're showing Broadway plays where you can go to a theater
and concerts.
See it. And, yeah, but, I mean, like, that harkens back to the old watching boxing on closed circuit TV, mm-hmm. when, you know, Ali fought Frazier.
I went and saw WrestleMania 2 at the Spectrum, and it was not at the Spectrum. I went and saw it on closed caption TV.
Really?
Yep, I sure did. And I mean... It was packed. Like, the Spectrum was full. I would say, like, maybe three quarters full. And you know how they have the big TVs on the
big
center. There was, like, an additional set of TVs that were around at about the same size. But, I mean, I don't remember how much tickets were back then. I was a kid. I was, like, I don't know, in my teenager years. But it was just as good for me to watch it there because pay-per-view had really only started... You know, at WrestleMania 1, I remember getting pay-per-view, and then 2, we went and actually saw at the Spectrum, which was weird. But yeah, like, you know, things have evolved so much, and I'm actually not a person that enjoys the theater experience anymore because, for one, as a family of four, it's expensive.
Very expensive.
So let me ask you a question. You see the Avengers. What was your you don't have to say how many people went or whatever. What was your total cost to spend to go see it?
Boy. It was my son and I and my two grandsons. So you figure, what, $15 a ticket?
So like 60 to 80 bucks,
yeah.
By the time you get snacks and stuff. Now, when it comes out on Blu-ray, do you spend an additional 30 to buy it?
I will, only because... I'll spend an additional 40 or whatever it'll be, because I'll get the 3D version of it in Blu-ray. But that's not... I'm buying it so that when my grandkids come over, mm-hmm. we can watch it again together.
I'm just wondering, like, how much would you invest yourself into a film?
It would depend on the film. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if it was remake of Creature from Black Lagoon in 3D and it was good, you know, I'd be...
Whatever.
I'd be there every night, you know.
Right.
That's something I would go to a theater for, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I still love the theater-going experience. It's changed in many ways, and I think it's kind of dumbed itself down, if that makes any sense. Like, it's not the big event that it used to be, you know. Mm-hmm. To me, it's all gearing towards, you know, the eventual possible demise of theaters. You know, mm-hmm. As home televisions get bigger and better, and more video releases become available, I think that's the way it's going to go. But sadly, I'll bet you the video release price is going to be the theatrical price. It's going to cost you, you know, because they figure...
To watch it in your home is going to cost you $20.
Right.
You think so?
They figure, you know, that's more than one person watching it, you know, mm-hmm. a family of four or whatever. So, I mean, I could even see it going up to like $30 or so.
Really?
Yeah. I, just a guess.
Would people pay it, do you think?
I think they will.
I mean, pay-per-view is up to 60, I think, for wrestling now. $60.
Is it?
I think so. Like, you know, and I think the only time that I'll do it now is, you know, once a year we'll have a WrestleMania party at someone else's house and we'll do it and we'll all chip in like $5 or $10.
Yeah, so we used to do that with boxing. We used, you know, I can't tell you how many Mike Tyson fights I bought that were over in the first or second
round.
Right? It's like, oh my God, you know. But I mean, you knew that going in, you know. And usually with a Tyson fight, there was another good fight on the undercard.
Where were you upset with Buster Douglas then?
No, that was actually shown for free on HBO.
That was they were in Japan, right?
They didn't even think they could pay-per-view that because they thought it was going to be such a mismatch that no one would buy it. And it turned out to be that's the one he lost the title on. Yeah. But, I think that's the way video on demand is going, you know. It'll be interesting to see how it all turns out and how many more film companies decide to do something, you know, like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's...
Well, I think that, you know, as a filmmaker, you're trying to make back every dollar that you have spent. You know, we talked earlier before we started about film distribution on how it's changed, you know, and how you're just... When you make a movie, your key is to try and get as many people to see it as possible, whether it's egotistical or whatever the case is.
Now, do you mean as the creative filmmaker or as the film company?
As the creative filmmaker.
Okay.
Okay, let's say, you know, I have a movie, No Clowning Around. You can go to noclowningaround.com. Cheap plug.
Oh, my God.
And for me, my goal, if I'm happy with it, I want to let as many people see it as possible. If someone comes to me and they have a distribution offer, would I take a loss to try and expose the movie to more people? We had talked about that earlier when we weren't on the air. And the answer in 99% of the times is yes, because you're hoping that if you can get exposure, you're always looking for the next step. So if I can get the word out there about this movie and people recognize, oh, Rob Dimension was involved with that, I want to know what he's got going on next. When I approach people for funding, because that's another new trend that's kind of come out, where you're hoping, you know, the investment packages to make a movie, you would have to go look for funding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not so bad. Now you can ask for individual, you know, donations or funding through Kickstarter or through Indiegogo.
Oh, I want my $5 back, by the
way. Oh, you invested more than that, buddy. No, I'm just kidding. You know, what happens is, if a film costs you on an independent level and you're making a short, you know, my budget probably to make my movie is a little over $2,000, honestly. You know, I set out a goal to reach $1,200, which more or less covers filming. And when you talk about filming, people don't realize you have to pay for food, you have to pay for everything on a daily basis. We have 4 days of shooting and we have travel and we have everything else. But that doesn't include, you know, t-shirts, posters, you know, DVDs, VHSs, you know, film festivals, all that other stuff. But if someone comes to me and they want to invest, they're going to try and see. And all I can think of is that they're looking at it and saying, if they can release it on video on demand and they can grab $10, okay, per purchase. Let's say, I don't know how much of it. Let's say I get $2 off of every $10 purchase. I'm going to be happy if there's 1,000 people that buy it because I make back the budget that I lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to make more of my nut back more likely.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah. You know, than I would if it gets released in theaters. So, I mean, it's a tough, you know, it's not as easy anymore to get your film seen, for one thing. Everyone that has a camera is making a movie. And
well, that's the thing. Like, I constantly get approached, you know, by independent filmmakers wanting me to show their film, you know, at Monster Mania. And, you know,
you have a criteria.
Right. We've done a thing in the past where, you know, we did the Sinister Short contest, which will probably, next year being the 10th anniversary of Monster Mania, we'll probably revise something like that for one of the shows next year, either in Cherry Hill or Baltimore, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, one time in each. You know, like a lot of times, you know, like we center the films around the stars that are attending the show.
Sure.
So, you know, and if you got a guest list of 25 people, we're not even going to get 25 films.
Right.
You know, we don't have time to show 25 films. So,
you show what, like 14?
Somewhere between 12 and 20.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what's all involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's not easy for an independent film to get into, you know, our film schedule. And we get so many requests for it, you know, and it's, it's hard for me. Like, I'm more than likely, I haven't seen the film that they're asking me to mm-hmm. put into the program. And in all honesty, I'm not going to have time to watch it prior to a convention.
Sure.
I mean, you've seen what yeah. all goes involved. And, you know, I mean, as soon as we get done a radio show, I got to get back on the September stuff for, you know, the show at the end of the month. There's no time to sit and watch, you know, 5 different or 10 different independent films for me to decide what's going to make it, and, you know, onto our screens and for our convention and what's not. I mean, it's just not a reasonable thing.
And so, once you open those floodgates,
once you open that door,
it's over.
Exactly.
It's over. I mean, and I understand where you're coming from, like, totally, you know, and that's why there are such things as film festivals. That's why there are other things that are available. I mean, it'd be great to get exposure at your convention, but at the same time, people have to realize that that's why you have sponsorship programs.
Right. And I mean, people also have to realize, you know, we're looking to appeal to as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have Tobin Bell at the show and I want to show the first Saw film, you know, is that going to get a bigger crowd and make more people happy, or is showing an independent film that people don't know?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's...
It's not like you have tons of rooms where you can show.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you're limited. You know, as big as Monster Mania is, you know, as big as much room as you take over, it's still, you know, a structured, limited amount of time and space.
Well, that's what was good about doing the Sinister Short thing, because we dedicated the one room after the Yorkie auction
yeah.
on Sunday to just show these shorts, and we tried to show, you know, as many as we could.
Yeah, I hosted that. It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like, it took like 2 hours, I guess.
Yeah.
And
but we got to show a lot of films, and like, if I were to do it again, you know, which we hope to do next year, like, that's the route I would go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, I would probably enjoy more of a full-length movie, but to get more independent films shown, yeah. which I would like to do, I probably would go with the shorts, just to, you know.
Yeah, usually the cutoff is like 22 minutes to a half an hour or less.
Yeah.
And I've seen some that were 6 minutes that were, I mean, I've seen one that was 6 minutes long. It was a silent movie. There was just, you know, music and like a soundtrack. And I was blown away by the cinematography. There are some really talented independent filmmakers who are, you know, just like anyone else, they're looking to take that next step. So,
well, the one that won the contest, that your Ghostlight, I believe it was.
Yeah,
that was a really.
It was great.
Yeah, it was a great film.
Big fan. Yeah, I was a big fan of that. Hey, we're gonna wrap up. Sorry, we didn't get to any horror news, and I didn't get to. I'll, you know what? I'll play the music. It's time for some horror news. Even though we're not saying, well, everyone enjoys me like massacring that word, so I can't tell you how many tweets or messages I get about horror news.
I have to say that I did get some tweets and messages. I was wrong last week when I said Battleship came out in 3D in the theaters. It didn't. It was originally announced that it was going to, and then somewhere down the line they made the decision not to release it in 3D. So when I was bemoaning last week how it came out on DVD and Blu-ray and mm-hmm. didn't come out in 3D, well, it's because it was never shot in 3D. But one of our listeners pointed that out to us, so thank you for that. So we do have people listen, Rob.
Oh, we have two. We have two or three. Hey, don't forget, you know, we are getting closer. We are simply weeks away from Monster Mania Con 23, 3 days of sheer terror.
Mm. That sounds, I'm scared.
That's pretty scary stuff. It's September 28th through the 30th. In Hunt Valley, Maryland, at the Hunt Valley Inn on Shawin Road. Is that correct?
Yes. I was considering how you massacre
I know,
horror. I cringe when you start to talk about the Baltimore show.
And the VIPs as of right now are Aji Argento and Jamie Kennedy. Maybe we'll see someone else, but you never know.
You never know.
Never know with you, man. You are just adding people at the last minute. You can check out MonsterMania.net for all information about the convention. If you want to listen to more Monster Mania Radio, you can visit MonsterManiaRadio.net. Look for us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And as always, if you can, rate and review the show. We greatly appreciate it. If you'd like to interact with Dave or myself, you can follow us on Twitter at MonsterManiaCon, at RobDimension. You can look for my website, RobDimension.com, or the film I'm doing, NoClowningAround.com. That was my second cheap plug.
Oh,
I have to pay for these things. And Hopefully we'll see every we'll talk to everyone next week.
Yes.
Any last minute words?
Nope, just keep checking Facebook. We're waiting to get some replies for people for the Maryland Monster Mania 23 show, and hopefully we'll be adding some more names this week.
Awesome. Hey guys, take care. We'll see you next week.